for anyone who is or has a boss, this is The Boss Show with Jim Hessler and Steve Matenko.
Today on The Boss Show, what's the matter? Email overload got you down? Never fear. The Boss Show's own productivity consultant, Elizabeth Bowman, is here with tips for taming the email monster.
What I like to do with most of our clients is switch the way we're looking at it, because most people start by reacting to their email. They might even check their email on their mobile device before they're out of bed in the morning. And so what I always want people to do is at least put your feet on the floor first in the morning, get out of bed, get your cup of coffee, then maybe pick up your mobile device. But you need to have a very systematic, proactive approach to it.
Plus, what might be possible for you if you weren't afraid of rejection?
Most people, the vast majority, I think, have such fear of rejection that their lives never reach their potential.
How one Bill Gates wannabe defeated fear with hilarious gusto. Right now on The Boss Show.
Hello, I'm Jim Hessler, the founder of Path Forward Leadership Development, and I'm the business guy.
Yes, you are. Jim, I'm Steve Matenko. I am a Harvard-educated leadership coach, and I am the psychology guy.
Being a business guy is better than being a psychology guy.
Well, from your perspective, perhaps. Jim, have you ever felt rejected?
I'm actually surprisingly resilient to that, but of course I have.
It's not surprising to me.
You're saying I just don't really give a damn what other people think?
Yeah, right. Doesn't surprise me.
Some of that, yeah.
Which is actually part of the reason that your business career was so successful.
I think you're probably
right.
Because
you were so resilient.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have my feelings easily hurt.
But I think that you're in the vast minority on that.
Yeah, I would agree.
And in fact, most people, the vast majority, I think, have such fear of rejection that their lives never reach their potential. Is that too much to say?
No, I don't think
because of their fear of rejection.
No, I don't. I think that's absolutely true.
So I came across this really intriguing story about this guy, this Chinese guy named Jia Zhang. I may be mangling that as best I can do my pidgin Chinese, who was born in Beijing. Bill Gates was his idol. He actually saw Bill Gates speak in Beijing when he was a kid, and he decided to follow him to the United States. He wanted to be Bill Gates.
Well, Bill Gates probably could have rejected him very effectively.
Yes, he probably could have. And so he came to the States. He did come to the States. He created a successful career at Dell Computers, family, you know, great life situation. But he was unsatisfied. At age 30, he decided he was really unsatisfied because he didn't fulfill his original dream to become Bill Gates or just really to become a successful entrepreneur.
Or Jia Gates.
So he decided to quit his job at Dell 4 days before his first child was born, with his wife's blessing, amazingly enough. And he decided to start to build a company. But in building the company, he gave himself 6 months to get some traction, some investments or something. But in building this company, starting to build the company, he found that he faced a lot of rejection. And he started feeling more and more deflated. 4 months into the six-month experiment, he went to his wife and he said, I don't think I can do this. And she said, wait, you gave yourself 6 months, not 4 months. Go back on the road and hit it. And what he, in dealing with this, with the kind of hurt after hurt after hurt of rejection, he realized he needed to do something about his response to rejection itself if he was going to be successful. So he came across this thing called rejection therapy. And what rejection therapy does is it asks you to go out and make some preposterous request every day, just to kind of become more resilient, to increase your immunity to the hurt of rejection.
So you and I could get this by just going out and asking women for dates.
Well, you would get rejected. I would
of course
just get
not.
Constant. I hope my wife is not listening to this, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do
of
it to begin
not.
With,
of course
honey.
Not. Of course not.
So anyway, judging, but we digress, decided to make one of these ridiculous demands every day for 100 days. 60 days into the process, he gives a TED talk.
So I started going out and ask for some crazy stuff to get rejected. For example, I went to a burger joint. After eating, I said, can I get a burger refill instead of a drink refill? And then one day I went to PetSmart and said, hey, can I get my hair trimmed like a German Shepherd? And this last weekend, I went to a random Super Bowl party saying, can I join you guys? I brought chips. And of course, I got rejected. But amazing things happened. I started getting yeses, a lot more than I thought. And here are some of the yeses I got. One day, I knock on the stranger's door saying, can I play soccer in your backyard? He said, come on in. I'm like, okay. And one day I tracked down a police officer driving his car and said, hey, can I pretend to be you and drive your car and sit there? And he's like, do it. All right. And then one day I was flying. Before my flight took off, I asked the flight attendant saying, can I give the safety announcement instead of you? They're going to pay a lot more attention to me. Trust me.
So this guy just fascinates me.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, what might be possible in our lives if we really took that kind of rejection?
If we were fearless.
Yeah. I mean, he notes in his talk that Obama, in winning the last election, was rejected by 61 million people. And, you know, I mean, you hear this sort of thing all the time, but C.S. Lewis, who wrote Chronicles of Narnia, the manuscript was rejected 800 times before a publisher finally accepted it. So, yeah, what might be possible for you if you weren't afraid of rejection? And Jia Jiang ends his TED Talk by saying, if I open myself to the world will open itself to me. When we come back, we're going to talk to Elizabeth Bowman about the perils and promise, and especially perils, of email. You're listening to The Boss Show. Jim, a riddle for you. What is responsible for the greatest productivity enhancement and efficiency enhancement of any modern business tool?
The number two pencil.
Get me a Gen Y, somebody. You know, actually, it'd probably be Gen X. Gen Ys probably don't even believe in email anymore.
Pencil?
But yes, the answer, my answer anyway, is email.
Of course.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, it has
changed my entire way of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And all those many years ago when it first came out.
Yeah. And all you have to do is think about what business life was like before email. And it's just so clear we get so much more done. And it's still, in this day and age of texting and Instagrams and Twitter and Pinterest, it's still the favored mode of workplace communication, according to surveys. And it's the bane of pretty much everybody's existence,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it's a true love-hate relationship.
So we have brought into the studio our favorite Boss Show regular guest, and I say that to all the regular guests, but definitely our favorite Boss Show regular guest, Elizabeth Bowman, who's president of Innovatively Organized, which is a Seattle-based productivity consultancy firm. And we have used Elizabeth's services. Many of the team, the Boss Show team, have used Elizabeth's services, and they're amazing. So she does fabulous work. So, you know, you can pay me under the table later. Elizabeth, welcome to the Boss Show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So email overwhelms all of us.
Yes.
I mean, is there anyone who's not living under a rock who isn't overwhelmed by email? I often get 100 emails a day or more. I've talked to people who get several hundred, even as many as 1,000 emails a day or more, which just seems just crazy. Like, how can you possibly handle that? So
I need to interject because Elizabeth was on the show several months ago, and I took it as a challenge to have my email box empty. Not every day, but once a week.
That's good.
And I've been doing that. And so I am not, I don't think of myself as one of those people who's overwhelmed by email anymore. So thank you for challenging me on my thinking about that.
Well, you're very welcome. That's what I like to do, is help you have it emptier inbox, if not fully empty, to make sure it's not just digital clutter in this giant digital pile that's your email.
So for those of us who are, okay, so not everyone is overwhelmed by email. Actually, I don't think I'm overwhelmed by email either, but I get a lot, and it's a challenge. So for those of us to whom email is a challenge, if we get 100 or more emails a day, what? Where do we start?
Well, I will tell you, you're not alone by being challenged. I have not yet met a client that comes to me and goes, email is not a problem. I enjoy sitting down at my computer and using my email. We run surveys all the time with our clients, and one of the number one things we find out is they just don't want to be seated at their computer anymore. They don't want to have to be tied to it. But unfortunately for the average office worker in their workday, they need to spend 2 to 3 hours a day managing their email. It's something that, yes, was designed to help us be more productive and more efficient and communicate a lot easier, but it's also now something that's taking up time every single day.
I wonder how that compares to 40 years ago.
When we were answering handwritten letters.
How much time we would have spent dealing with routine office correspondence.
Right. Well, back then,
so it may not be that different.
It's not that different. We still had routine correspondence. Mm-hmm. Now you can disseminate it to larger audiences, and it's a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So things are just moving a lot faster. But because we all have email on our mobile devices, whereas 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you pretty much woke up, went, drove into your office, checked your email at your desk. Well, now everybody has it in their hip pocket or in their briefcase on their mobile device. And so we're now receiving more email faster, you know,
which
as it's arriving.
Which encourages people to use it even more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do we stop hating email?
Great question. The way that we stop hating it is we actually use it proactively. What I like to do with most of our clients is switch the way we're looking at it. Because most people start by reacting to their email. They might even check their email on their mobile device before they're out of bed in the morning. And so what I always want people to do is at least put your feet on the floor first in the morning.
For anyone who is or has a boss, this is The Boss Show with Jim Hessler and Steve Matenko.
Today on The Boss Show, what's the matter? Email overload got you down? Never fear. The Boss Show's own productivity consultant, Elizabeth Bowman, is here with tips for taming the email monster.
What I like to do with most of our clients is switch the way we're looking at it. Because most people start by reacting to their email. They might even check their email on their mobile device before they're out of bed in the morning. And so what I always want people to do is at least put your feet on the floor first in the morning, get out of bed, get your cup of coffee, then maybe pick up your mobile device. But you need to have a very systematic, proactive approach to it.
Plus, what might be possible for you if you weren't afraid of rejection?
Most people, the vast majority, I think, have such fear of rejection that their lives never reach their potential.
How one Bill Gates wannabe defeated fear with hilarious gusto. Right now on The Boss Show.
Hello, I'm Jim Hessler, the founder of Path Forward Leadership Development, and I'm the business guy.
Yes, you are, Jim. I'm Steve Matenko. I am a Harvard-educated leadership coach, and I am the psychology guy.
Being a business guy is better than being a psychology guy.
Well, from your perspective, perhaps. Jim, have you ever felt rejected?
I'm actually surprisingly resilient to that, but of course I have.
It's not surprising to me.
You're saying I just don't really give a damn what other people think?
Yeah, right. Doesn't surprise me.
Some of that, yeah.
Which is actually part of the reason that your business career was so successful.
I think you're probably
because
right.
Because you were so resilient.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have my feelings easily hurt.
But I think that you're in the vast minority on that.
I would agree.
And in fact, most people, the vast majority, I think, have such fear of rejection that their lives never reach their potential. Is that too much to say?
No, I don't think
because of their fear of rejection.
No, I don't. I think that's absolutely true.
So I came across this really intriguing story about this guy, this Chinese guy named Jia Zhang. I may be mangling that. It's the best I can do, my pidgin Chinese, who was born in Beijing. Bill Gates was his idol. He actually saw Bill Gates speak in Beijing when he was a kid, and he decided to follow him to the United States. He wanted to be Bill Gates.
Well, Bill Gates probably could have rejected him very effectively.
Yes, he probably could have. And so he came to the States. He did come to the States. He created a successful career at Dell Computers, family, you know, great life situation. But he was unsatisfied. At age 30, he decided he was really unsatisfied because he didn't fulfill his original dream to become Bill Gates or just really to become a successful entrepreneur.
Or Jia Gates.
Jia Gates. So he decided to quit his job at Dell 4 days before his first child was born, with his wife's blessing, amazingly enough, and he decided to start to build a company. But in building the company, he gave himself 6 months to get some traction, some investments or something. But in building this company, starting to build the company, he found that he faced a lot of rejection. And he started feeling more and more deflated. 4 months into the six-month experiment, he went to his wife and he said, I don't think I can do this. And she said, wait, you gave yourself 6 months, not 4 months. Go back on the road and hit it. And what he, in dealing with this, with the kind of hurt after hurt after hurt of rejection, he realized he needed to do something about his response to rejection itself if he was going to be successful. So he came across this thing called rejection therapy. And what rejection therapy does is it asks you to go out and make some preposterous request every day, just to kind of become more resilient, to increase your immunity to the hurt of rejection.
So you and I could get this by just going out and asking women for dates.
Well, you would get rejected. I would just get constant. I hope my wife is not listening to this, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it to begin with, honey.
Of course not.
So anyway, judging, but we digress, decided to make one of these ridiculous demands every day for 100 days. 60 days into the process, he gives a TED talk.
So I started going out and ask for some crazy stuff to get rejected. For example, I went to a burger joint. After eating, I said, can I get a burger refill instead of a drink refill? And then one day I went to PetSmart and said, hey, can I get my hair trimmed like a German Shepherd? And this last weekend, I went to a random Super Bowl party saying, can I join you guys? I brought chips. And of course, I got rejected. But amazing things happened. I started getting yeses, a lot more than I thought. And here are some of the yeses I got. One day, I knock on the stranger's door saying, can I play soccer in your backyard? He said, come on in. I'm like, okay. And one day I tracked down a police officer driving his car and said, hey, can I pretend to be you and drive your car and sit there? And he's like, do it. All right. And then one day I was flying. Before my flight took off, I asked the flight attendant saying, can I give the safety announcement instead of you? They're going to pay a lot more attention to me. Trust me.
So this guy just fascinates me.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, what might be possible in our lives if we really took that kind of rejection
therapy? If we were fearless.
Yeah. I mean, he notes in his talk that Obama, in winning the last election, was rejected by 61 million people. And, you know, I mean, you hear this sort of thing all the time, but C.S. Lewis, who wrote Chronicles of Narnia, the manuscript was rejected 800 times before a publisher finally accepted it. So, yeah, what might be possible for you if you weren't afraid of rejection? And Jia Zhang ends his TED talk by saying, if I open myself to the world will open itself to me. When we come back, we're going to talk to Elizabeth Bowman about the perils and promise, and especially perils, of email. You're listening to The Boss Show. Jim, a riddle for you. What is responsible for the greatest productivity enhancement and efficiency enhancement of any modern business tool?
The number two pencil.
Get me a Gen Y, somebody. You know, actually, it'd probably be Gen X. Gen Ys probably don't even believe in email anymore.
Pencil?
But yes, the answer, my answer anyway, is email.
Of course.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, it has
changed my entire way of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And all those many years ago when it first came out.
Yeah. And all you have to do is think about what business life was like before email. And it's just so clear we get so much more done. And it's still, in this day and age of texting and Instagrams and Twitter and Pinterest, it's still the favored mode of workplace communication, according to surveys. And it's the bane of pretty much everybody's existence,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it's a true love-hate relationship.
So we have brought into the studio our favorite Boss Show regular guest, and I say that to all the regular guests, but definitely our favorite Boss Show regular guest, Elizabeth Bowman, who's president of Innovatively Organized, which is a Seattle-based productivity consultancy firm. And we have used Elizabeth's services. Many of the team, the Boss Show team, have used Elizabeth's services, and they're amazing. So she does fabulous work. So you know, you can pay me under the table later. Elizabeth, welcome to the Boss Show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So email overwhelms all of us.
Yes.
I mean, is there anyone who's not living under a rock who isn't overwhelmed by email? I often get 100 emails a day or more. I've talked to people who get several hundred, even as many as 1,000 emails a day or more, which just seems just crazy. Like, how can you possibly handle that? So
I need to interject because Elizabeth was on the show several months ago, and I took it as a challenge to have my email box empty. Not every day, but once a week.
That's good.
And I've been doing that. And so I am not, I don't think of myself as one of those people who's overwhelmed by email anymore. So thank you for challenging me on my thinking about that.
Well, you're very welcome. That's what I like to do, is help you have it emptier mm-hmm. inbox, if not fully empty, mm-hmm. to make sure it's not just digital clutter in this giant digital pile that's your email.
So for those of us who are, okay, so not everyone is overwhelmed by email. Actually, I don't think I'm overwhelmed by email either, but I get a lot, and it's a challenge. So for those of us to whom email is a challenge, if we get 100 or more emails a day, what? Where do we start?
Well, I will tell you, you're not alone by being challenged. I have not yet met a client that comes to me and goes, email is not a problem. I enjoy sitting down at my computer and using my email. We run surveys all the time with our clients, and one of the number one things we find out is they just don't want to be seated at their computer anymore. Mm. They don't want to have to be tied to it. But unfortunately for the average office worker in their workday, they need to spend 2 to 3 hours a day
Ouch.
Managing their email.
Ouch.
It's something that, yes, was designed to help us be more productive and more efficient and communicate a lot easier, but it's also now something that's taking up time every single day.
I wonder how that compares to 40 years ago.
When we were answering handwritten letters.
How much time we would have spent dealing with routine office correspondence.
Right. Well, back then,
so it may
then,
not be that different.
It's not that different. We still had routine correspondence. Mm-hmm. Now you can disseminate it to larger audiences, and it's a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So things are just moving a lot faster. But because we all have email on our mobile devices, whereas 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you pretty much woke up, drove into your office, checked your email at your desk. Well, now everybody has it in their hip pocket or in their briefcase on their mobile device. And so we're now receiving more email faster, you know,
which
as it's arriving.
Which encourages people to use it even more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how do we stop hating email? What are your first steps?
Great question. The way that we stop hating it is we actually use it proactively. What I like to do with most of our clients is switch the way we're looking at it. Because most people start by reacting to their email. They might even check their email on their mobile device before they're out of bed in the morning. And so what I always want people to do is at least put your feet on the floor first in the morning, get out of bed, get your cup of coffee, then maybe pick up your mobile device. But you need to have a very systematic, proactive approach to it.
Well, the feet on the floor.
That way it's not overwhelming.
And the feet on the floor is good also if you're hungover. So, you know, that kind of helps.
Thanks for that, Jim.
Keeps the room from spinning.
So, okay, but is this true for everyone?
It is true for everyone.
That everyone should do this?
Yep. Everybody needs to really switch their mindset so they're more proactive with emails. And
what do you mean by that? What does that look like other than putting your feet on the floor and getting your coffee in the morning before?
One of the things that we like to talk about is when you want to be proactive with your email, you really want to think about it the same way you do paper piles. You want to only touch that piece of paper once. You want to touch it, make a decision of where it goes, and then put it in whatever bin or send it along into the trash or the recycling. Well, you want to do the same thing with your email. The moment an email arrives, you only want to read it once. And in 2 minutes or less, make a decision about that email. And so what we really have to work on with email management is helping people make decisions faster. helping people not just read stuff and become overwhelmed. We don't want them to read 25 messages in their inbox and then be aware of what's there, but they haven't actually tackled it or done anything.
It's still sitting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, you're going to tell me I'm wrong, but that's not how I do it. I mean, what okay. I do is I do often read emails twice because I'll do a triage pass where I'll scan it very quickly and I'll decide, can I, in 15 or 30 seconds at max, delete, file, or just decide to answer later?
Okay,
and then go through again.
To show you what a good student I've been of your teaching, I'm going to answer that question for
you. I want to hear your answer because you've been through my training.
Right. So it doesn't mean that you don't read the email a second time. What it does mean is you get it out of your inbox and into some other place before you read it the second time.
Is he right about that?
He's right about that.
I hate when he's right.
Yeah, we'll have to get you at our training too. But
I wish our listeners could have seen Steve's face when she said he needed training.
My mommy said that at age 3 and I resisted that too. So
sorry, Steve.
I'll take it. Well,
yeah. So with email, really what we want to have happen is we want to have a workflow with our email. The way that I always describe it is it's very similar to your paper-based mail where you come home at the end of a long day from work, you go out to your mailbox, you pick up your mail, you bring it in the house, you hopefully don't leave it on your dining room table or your kitchen counters, although I have seen that, but hopefully you're immediately sorting it. You're throwing the junk in the trash, you're recycling items, but then you're splitting out, here's the bills I have to pay, here's the magazines I want to read later, here's the invitations to graduations and weddings and birthdays that are the fun things. But all of those now signify a task, right? All of those invitations, you have two things you immediately have to do. You probably have to go shopping for a gift, and you have to put the date on your calendar if you're going to attend. So there's something else you need to do. So the moment you walk through the door, hopefully you're just sorting it in those batches, but you are going to touch it again because then you're going to go to your batch of all the bills you need to pay
and take action
mm-hmm. on them and tackle them. So you want to do the same thing with your email. My goal is that you only touch things in your inbox once.
Got it.
Because that's where it arrives. And in 2 minutes or less, maybe in your case, 15 seconds or less, you immediately open an email, make a decision. Can I delete it? Can I get rid of it? Can I delegate it? Or does it need to be something that I'm going to file for later into one of my batches? Like, this email is now prompting me to pick up the phone and make a phone call. Well, I can't do that right this second. I'm going to put it in my folder called phone calls.
What about reducing the number of incoming to begin with before
You
have to do all that sorting?
There's
tips for that.
Yeah. One of the things I always tell people is if you have not unsubscribed from all those mass emails that you're getting, every time you get one of those, it's like getting trash right into your inbox. So you're getting trash on your screen. It's digital clutter. So as much as possible, you want to try and unsubscribe from anything that you're no longer reading. If you signed up for it. Most people go, but this one I signed up for. They didn't accidentally put me on it. It's not a mailing list they didn't ask for. But even if you signed up for it, maybe you read it for 6 months and now it's repetitive and you want to get rid of it.
I always feel a little guilty about unsubscribing, like I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings. Isn't that stupid?
Yeah,
but I actually get like,
the mailing list is small. We've had people unsubscribe from our mailing list I look at, people that I know.
Yeah.
And they unsubscribe and hurts my feelings a little bit. Oh, well, get
over
it.
Don't invite them to the Christmas party.
Yeah. <That's right. laughs> Well, it's actually really common right now to unsubscribe from newsletters for companies and things, maybe even the Boss Show, because maybe the company also has a blog and you're going to sign up to get the RSS feed of the blog or you're going to follow all their information on Twitter. And so you might still be getting the information just in a different venue.
She's trying to make us feel better.
I am.
About our unsubscribes.
Did it work?
A little bit.
I need to go through rejection therapy, I think. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to get people to respond to your emails more effectively. You're listening to The Boss Show.
I read your email this morning soon as I got out of bed. Just what I needed helped me clear my head. Took me a while to read though, cause it was kinda long. But it's always good to hear from you and learn what's going on. The information you provide never fails to impress. Where you get it all, baby, is anybody's guess.
Elizabeth Bowman, president of Innovatively Organized, How do you get people to respond to your emails more effectively? In other words, you send out emails and you get frustrated that you don't get replies. Mm-hmm. What's going wrong and how do you address it?
Great question. We always like to tell people that the way you write a subject line of your email when you send it immediately tells the person how to respond. You're telling the recipient how to handle your email just by how you write the very beginning of it in the subject line.
Like, so, respond now or I'll kill you, that sort of thing?
No, but you do want to make sure it's really specific. I get a ton of emails from people that just say help because they need productivity help, or they have a question and that's the only word they put in there, or they put the word introduction in the subject line because they want to introduce me over email to somebody else that they know. Well, all of those emails immediately go in my pile of, okay, I'll handle that later because you haven't told me why it's important or why it's urgent. And so I want more detail in the subject line, especially with all of our email programs grouping emails by topic and by subject.
That's right. And the other thing that happens is on those chain emails where we're on the sixth or seventh email, that nobody's changed the subject line.
Yep. Exactly.
You're still seeing the subject line from
the
initial
and the conversation
email.
Is completely shifted to something different.
Yeah.
And you have to remember, okay, what is that conversation now about?
Right.
That's different than the subject line. So,
speaking about email chain emails, what do you think? It drives me nuts when people don't include the previous parts of the email thread in their reply. You agree with that?
It's a setting on your Outlook.
Yeah, it's a setting in your email program.
Right.
And so it depends on the email program. You can't get mad at all the people sending you emails that do that because some of them, it's their email programs trying to cut down on the clutter. And because so many email programs now have conversation view, if you are using your email program with that conversation view, you shouldn't need the other piece to be at the bottom of it because you can toggle on your machine between the views. So it's just kind of the direction email's going so that each individual email doesn't become this exponentially large file where it includes all the previous ones collected with it.
Okay, other tips for getting people to respond to your emails better than they're currently doing.
I actually love the acronym EOM, using that at the end of a subject line. Do either of you know what that means?
End of message?
Yes. Oh, you win an award now.
I thought it was the famous rock group EOM Speedwagon.
No.
No. Okay.
So EOM is a fantastic thing to use at the end of a subject line because it stands for end of message. So you maybe just have one question for somebody. You need to know.
Oh, I see.
What time is your budget meeting later
so
today?
So the subject line is the message.
The subject line is the message. So you're kind of using your email program like you would an instant message or a text message, but you're leaving out the fluff. What we try and train people to do is get rid of the fluff out of your emails because the moment an email is too long or it looks wordy or it's even in paragraph form, all of a sudden to the recipient, it looks like, oh, I can't do that in 2 minutes. They wrote me too much information. They're going to have to decipher where the question is versus where's just the niceties about the weather. And so it gets ignored until later. Versus the ones that you can answer right away with two words, you're going to get a response really fast.
So EOM right at the end of the subject line means you don't need to click this open to see the message. That is the message.
It means the body of it's empty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you just respond with your one word, yes, no, or it's at 2 o'clock. Yeah. So you'll get stuff done a lot faster.
That reminds me of you're talking about messages that are hard to respond to that people tend to put aside. I always think it's worth spending extra time making my emails as clear and as concise. I mean, in a way, that's kind of oxymoronic, extra time to make it concise.
Yep.
But I feel like that's respectful of the recipient to cut out superfluous wording, to make it as concise as possible and as clear as possible so that it makes it easier for them to respond.
Yeah, exactly. You definitely want to make sure that everything's very clear and you want to make sure the very first sentence of your email gets to the point. That sentence almost needs to be the executive summary or the synopsis of your email. So that way, if somebody's reading it on a mobile device or they have the view, even in their Outlook or their other email programs, or they have the view where they can see the first sentence before they even click and open it, you want to entice them with, here's the meat of it, here's what I need from you, and here's when I need it. In that first sentence, so they open it and they keep reading.
So if I want to tell Steve he's a flipping idiot, I want to do that in the first sentence of the email rather than the last sentence.
Exactly. Okay.
You know, yeah. Actually, I'd prefer that you do it in the subject line so okay. that I don't have to open.
Steve, you're a flipping idiot.
EOM. Right. No, but Jim.
I feel like I've created a monster now.
No, the monster was already there. Yeah. Jim, which of us do you think writes the clearest emails?
Uh-oh.
Oh, I think you do.
I think we both do. I think your emails are exceedingly clear. I think my emails are very clear too.
Well, and it's interesting you mention it because I was just
one of the few
say,
things I enjoy well, about working
well, thank
with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. We're a little old school, and I think when we write emails, I'm thinking of actually like writing a letter to this person. It's almost like a business letter, right? So, you know, hi, Steve, here's what I want to talk about. And I also, it drives me nuts when emails aren't grammatically correct, when they're sloppy. You know, I think you should write an intelligent email that shows respect for the other person. Now that's my age talking and growing up on the East Coast, maybe being a little bit more formal to begin with, but you know, I agree. I think we write excellent emails back and forth, especially.
Elizabeth, can you go overboard with being too careful about making sure that, you know, grammatical correctness and spelling and punctuation, can you go overboard with that?
Sure. Anybody can go overboard if they have perfectionist tendencies, mm-hmm. right? And as a productivity consultant, somebody who has perfectionist tendencies, and I think, Steve, you and I have talked about this before, it can actually slow you down.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to go back and rewrite your message four times before you send it. Yeah,
now, there is a big difference. We should clarify this. There is a huge difference between when you're emailing people that are on your team, so it's an internal organization type email, versus if you're in sales and you're contacting a client for the first time.
Great point.
You need to have that more formality to your email. You need to say hi, hello, maybe even say how was your weekend at the beginning,
and warm then regards.
Get into it. Right. And so it needs to be more friendly if it is contacting outside your regular work environment. If you're in that sales or customer service position. Now, if you're emailing the same five people all day long, you're emailing people that are your coworkers on your team, your boss, maybe somebody that's an assistant to you, then you can come up with your own email protocol so that everything is really as fast and as efficient as possible. You don't need the fluff at that point because you can save the fluff for your staff meeting.
So Steve says, can we meet next Tuesday at 2:30? I can just say yes.
Yeah.
If it was a client, I'd say, yes, I'm looking forward to the meeting and thank you very much. Right?
And maybe you're going to write the agenda for it and send it over. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there is a difference with who your audience is when you're writing an email. But the other thing that really helps ensure that you get a quick response with your email is not putting things in paragraph form and using bullet points to separate your questions.
Jim, ladies and gentlemen, Jim literally just slapped me on the hand. No, just patted me on the hand because Jim Hessler is the bullet point king.
I invented bullet points.
And he does it quite well. And it actually, the way it works when Jim does bullet points is it's so clear that he is... that his mind is being creative and fertile, and he's just kind of dumping idea after idea after idea. But they're all kind of frustratingly clear and concise. Drives me nuts that his mind works that well.
So are his bullet points questions to you, or is it just
information
that he's organized that way?
Usually he organizes his information that way.
Yeah. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of companies that are actually banning email in certain situations. Talking with Elizabeth Bowman. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Boss Show.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door. I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Elizabeth, I understand that Gmail has come out with a revolutionary new tool that kind of automatically sorts your email. How is that working?
Yeah, so Gmail just came out with their system recently that they actually organize your email. They put three tabs automatically at the top of your screen that you can toggle between, and they're trying to automatically detect an email from a person that you know that maybe you need to read and respond to versus emails that are mass newsletters and industry-related news or something from a retailer that you've signed up for. All those things that most of us want to unsubscribe from all the time, they're trying to automatically detect those and put them over in another folder or another tab for you. So that way, it's almost like they've come in, they've already sorted your email. Now, it's good for the consumer. It's good for the average email user because they don't have to deal with all the clutter and moving it themselves over to that other section. But there are some retailers that are getting upset because now all this money that they're spending on marketing campaigns, right, it's no longer hitting the inbox.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what happened with paper junk mail.
Yeah, it almost defines it as junk mail,
but
doesn't
that,
it?
But that brings up a great question, and I don't want to take this too far in a different direction, but is that sort of marketing actually still working?
Depends on who you ask. I'm not a marketing expert, but I like to get rid of clutter.
There are a lot of marketing experts who say email marketing campaigns are still huge in producing results.
Okay. Yeah.
And a couple of, we've talked about email overwhelm, at least a couple of companies have actually instituted partial bans on email. Mm-hmm. eBay, for example, and for the purpose of dealing with email overwhelm or softening it somehow, at eBay, management banned weekend emails. So if you had to write an email, you could draft it, you could schedule it to be sent on Monday, but you couldn't send it right then and there. And apparently people felt good about it. Productivity, nothing happened to productivity. And people really enjoyed it. Also in the UK, there's a supermarket that that introduced email-free Fridays. Mm-hmm. So you could go talk to people or get on the phone, but you couldn't send or theoretically answer any email at all on a Friday. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of startups right now in the tech industry that decided that they want to have one day a week without email because it forces a lot of them to then get on these web-based meetings or have a face-to-face meeting about something or have a conversation about it. And so the communication is still happening. It's just happening in other formats. The other thing that we're finding as well is instead of using email, people are moving into these project management tools where all the tasks are really tracked and you have your timeline. So it's not that people are really cutting down on communications at all. It's just that people are getting overwhelmed by email. And so it's instead of putting a Band-Aid on something or making it heal up and training people how to use email, they're just going to get rid of it and force them into a new tool. I'm not a huge fan of it, personally.
I'm really intrigued, though, by this, you know, occasional disconnection from email. Mm-hmm. Because one of my, you know, themes in my work with clients and Steve's as well is this whole idea of creativity and,
right,
and how busy we are and how cluttered our minds are. And I'm just wondering, you know, might an organization be more creative and more innovative if they had a day once a week where there was no email? I'm curious. That's something we should do a little research on and see if we can find out.
Well, one of the things that I'm a big fan of is there's a lot of organizations that are moving towards getting rid of the instant reply expectation. Mm-hmm. So if you can get the whole organization into a mindset of, okay, we need to communicate certain things over email because it gets information out to the group, and make sure that we're all trained on what's appropriate to put in an email. That's
right, because people are searching through the 100 emails to find the two that are expecting an immediate response, and that's really hard to do.
Right.
And that to me is what the most important principle behind this, what I also see as a misguided ban on email.
Right.
The principle being that if your boss is emailing you at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night and expects a reply, you've got a problem.
Right.
But, I mean, your culture has a problem.
Exactly.
But if your boss is emailing you at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night because he's a workaholic or she's a workaholic, but doesn't expect you to respond until Monday afternoon, then there's no problem. That's
right,
just all on the boss's personality style.
So
that
it's more, exactly right, well said, because it's more about the response expectation time. So you really have to communicate, okay, we're all going to check our email the first 15 minutes of every hour, or we're going to check our email three times a day. And it's okay if an email arrives from your boss at midnight, just because, like you said, they're a workaholic, and you don't respond until 9 o'clock because the workday starts at 9 o'clock.
Yep.
Right. And so it's more about having that conversation. But Jim, what you were talking about having a day away from email, I'm a big fan of taking breaks away from the regular work environment, whether mm-hmm. it's email or your to-do yeah. list or something else, because everybody needs a day to be more strategic in their thinking versus just tactical of getting things done. Most of us see email as something we just have to react to all the time.
We also need to encourage more companies to get together in teams and as an organization and talk about how they use email. Mm-hmm. This is an area of norms and values and expectations that you should have some rules about that. You should have some mutual, intentional, mutually stated expectations right. of each other around email. And very few organizations sit down and say, how can we best use email in our organization? Yeah. And even just that simple conversation would uncover all kinds of opportunities for it to be used more effectively.
You know, a lot of times when we go into companies and do training on email, we come out from that organization with, here's the email guidelines that they've decided yep. upon. And mm-hmm. if you get everybody in your team in one room going through the same email training, they know how to communicate, they know how to use it, they know the expectation, and then you set up guidelines,
yep.
it will stick.
Yep.
And then you can gain a lot of productivity.
And that's one small step toward getting teams to sit together more often and make yeah. shared decisions about everything.
Everything. Yeah, you got
but
it.
Everybody's too busy answering emails to get together with their teams.
Yep.
Well, can I add one thing? Sure. There is a company that I blogged about probably 2 years ago that they disabled the reply all button. So they didn't ban email, but they made it so you had to really think hard.
That's a really interesting idea.
Who you want to have on that email.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm totally in favor of getting rid of that reply all crutch where most of us just are trying to cover ourselves.
Yep.
All the time.
But I could see that being really frustrating because so many times you really do need to reply all. And then, you know, you've disabled that that quick tool and the shortcut button. Yeah. And so now you have to cut and paste and, you know, all the emails and that.
There's pros and cons,
me.
Right?
Yes, always. Yeah. If you want to know more about Elizabeth Bowman's services and her wisdom and her company's wisdom, go to innovativelyorganized.com or you can check her out at Twitter at iOrganized and the Facebook page is also iOrganized. Elizabeth, before we let you go, two or three like biggest, most important takeaways for people who are dealing with email challenges or email overwhelm.
Sure. The biggest thing I would say that we find with especially entrepreneurs is make sure that your email is syncing between all of your devices.
Oh, I thought you were saying S-I-N-K-I-N-G. Make sure your email is syncing. Got it.
No, we want to make sure that it's available to you no matter where we are. I mean, we have clients that are in their 80s that travel all the time, and we want to make sure that their email looks the same, feels the same. They have the same access to it. Whether they have a tablet or a smartphone or their laptop, we want to make sure it's all synced and available for yourself. So that way you don't come back to this giant pile you have to deal with and you don't feel out of touch with it. So that's the number one thing, especially for mobile professionals. And then the second thing that I will add for email is that it's really, really, really important that you make friends with your email and you stop trying to fit it in the middle of all your other meetings.
I love my email.
Yeah.
It's almost like make an appointment with your email
yes.
inbox, right?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So act like you're dating it. Have a mm-hmm. date every day with your email. Just, you know, you need to make sure that you're setting aside time for it. What we find all too often is people have dates with everybody else in their organization, all the other people they work with, and then their email is the last on the list that they squeeze in. So if you can make that date for it, everything else will fall into line.
And then I just want to put in a vote for sorting your mail. I love that analogy of going to your mailbox at home and grabbing, you know, 15 pieces of mail and they go into four or five different piles. It's very much the same approach you want to take with your electronic mail as well.
Right.
I think my wife is a little concerned about how much I'm dating my email currently, but that's my problem, Elizabeth. Maybe I'll consult with you on that at another time. Thanks so much for being on The Boss Show. We look forward to having you back again.
Well, I always love being here.
The Boss Show conversation continues 24/7 on LinkedIn at the Boss Show Connections Group. Join us there with your questions, stories, and ideas that might just end up being discussed on the show. Thanks for listening to The Boss Show.